Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Jackie Leonard, and in the early hours of Tuesday, the 5th of November, these are our main stories. The former US ambassador to Ukraine has told Donald Trump's impeachment inquiry that she was advised to tweet remarks praising the president in order to save her job. The Dutch government has admitted that one of its fighter jets carried out an airstrike in northern Iraq 4 years ago, which killed scores of people, including civilians. And British MPs have chosen a new Speaker of the House of Commons, Sir Lindsay Hoyle, who's regarded as a safe pair of hands to replace the high-profile John Bercow. And 42 years after this...
3, 2, 1... We have ignition and we have liftoff.
What the Voyager spacecraft have been telling us about what lies inside and outside our solar system. 4 US officials called to testify before Congress as part of an impeachment inquiry failed to turn up on Monday. But everyone in Washington is still talking about what's been said to the committee. The Democrats have released the first transcripts from closed-door testimony with several witnesses in relation to the now infamous telephone call between President Trump and his Ukrainian counterpart. They include concerns from the recalled U.S. envoy to Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch, who said she felt threatened by some comments made by the president. Mr. Trump responded to the transcripts.
The president of Ukraine was not a fan of hers either. I mean, he did not exactly say glowing things. I'm sure she's a very fine woman. I just don't know much about her.
Our correspondent in Washington, Gary O'Donoghue, talked us through what we've learned from these documents.
What the Democrats on these various committees on the Hill have decided to do is start to publish some of the transcripts that were taken from evidence that was heard behind closed doors. So over the last few weeks, they've been hearing from all sorts of people connected with the Ukraine controversy. The testimony has been behind closed doors. Some of their opening statements have been leaked. And what we're seeing today is the first two of those. One is from Marie Yovanovitch, who was the ambassador to Ukraine, who was removed by Donald Trump in the spring of this year. Another one is a senior aide to Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State. Both of them expressed serious concern about the role of Rudy Giuliani, the president's lawyer, in running Ukraine policy. Mr. McKinley says he resigned because he was concerned about the engagement of our missions to procure negative information for domestic political purposes. So, again, reiterating that view that the president was trying to get some information, trying to organise a deal, if you like, with Ukraine to put pressure on Joe Biden, his main political opponent here in next year's election.
So just how explosive are these allegations?
Some of them are quite extraordinary. Marie Yovanovitch, when she asks the ambassador to the EU, Gordon Sondland, what to do about the kind of misinformation that's being spread about her, he says, tweet some praise of the president. That's his solution to that. And she also talks about being warned by Ukrainian officials this time last year that Rudy Giuliani was out to get her, and told again by Ukrainian officials earlier this year that she needed to watch her back. And that's in respect of officials from her own country.
That was Gary O'Donoghue in Washington. Now to Iraq. Sounds of exchanges between the police and protesters on the streets of Baghdad on Monday. The health ministry says 4 people were killed and 35 others injured. Monday's unrest is the latest in a wave of demonstrations and civil disobedience by protesters who accuse the Iraqi government of corruption. More than 250 people have died since the unrest began last month. The protests are continuing, even though the Prime Minister has offered to resign. So why? A question for our Middle East editor, Jeremy Bowen.
It's an offer, it's not a reality, and for them the problems of Iraq go far deeper than the identity of the Prime Minister. This all started initially, the spark was simply the shift of jobs of a popular general, but actually very quickly became protests about corruption Iraq is one of the most corrupt countries in the world, about unemployment, about the lack of basic services, things like that. And then it's expanded subsequently into demonstrations against the entire political system in Iraq and demands that essentially the old guard gets swept away and there's some real change in the country. So simply saying that one prime minister might resign isn't quite what they wanted.
And late on Sunday, 4 Iraqi protesters were shot dead outside the Iranian consulate in the holy city of Karbala. What prompted that protest?
Well, not being there, it's hard to say. But my guess would be that these are protesters who see Iran's influence in the country as being a big part of the problem rather than being any kind of solution. So they apparently pulled down the flag, put up an Iraqi flag, and when the security forces dispersed them using tear gas and live bullets, those people were killed. So, you know, it is a sign of how deep-seated these protests are becoming.
Iran has been working hard, hasn't it, to build up its influence in both Iraq and indeed in Lebanon, where there have also been protests recently. How is Iran reacting to all this latest unrest? And is it worried it might be losing that influence?
For Iran, the status quo in Lebanon and Iraq are the things that it likes best, because it's not just simply working hard recently. This has been a long-term project to build up considerable influence in those two countries, which have a natural affinity because of big Shia Muslim populations. Iraq is a predominantly Shia Muslim country. The Iranians have apparently been speaking to some of their allies, militia leaders inside Iraq, saying, according to Reuters reports, saying, look, please take your pressure off the prime minister. Don't say he has to go. We need to sort this one out the way we want it to go. And if people start resigning, that will not be good for Iran.
That was Jeremy Bowen. The Netherlands has for the first time admitted that a Dutch fighter jet was involved in an airstrike in northern Iraq 4 years ago, which killed about 70 people, including civilians. The group Air Wars, which monitors civilian casualties, accused the Netherlands of a cover-up. Our defence correspondent Jonathan Beale has more details.
Reports of civilian casualties soon emerged after the airstrike on the Iraqi town of Hawija in June 2015. The building was an IS bomb-making factory. It's believed to have been rigged with explosives, causing extensive damage. Soon after the attack, the US military acknowledged the likelihood of civilian deaths and ordered an investigation. But at first, the Dutch MOD insisted that none of their airstrikes had caused civilian harm. Following accusations of a cover-up, the defence minister has now admitted that a Dutch jet was involved in the strike and that around 70 civilians and IS fighters were killed in the attack.
That was Jonathan Beale. The Congolese government says that since the beginning of the year, there have been more than 300 attacks on health workers fighting the Ebola virus in the east of the country. Since the outbreak began last year, the virus has killed over 2,000 people. Here's our Africa editor, Will Ross.
The 300 attacks this year on health workers and patients have left 6 people dead and 70 injured. The Congolese government and the United Nations say every attack sets back the Ebola response. Teams are suddenly unable to access the population to isolate those who may have become infected, and they can't carry out the vital education campaigns. 2 people have been arrested following what appears to be the latest act of violence related to the Ebola response, the murder of a radio host who had just presented an awareness programme.
That was Will Ross. India's top court has announced a series of measures intended to address the toxic smog, which is causing a public health emergency in the capital, Delhi. It ordered limits on the use of diesel generators and banned all construction and demolition work in the capital. The Chief Minister of Delhi, Arvind Kejriwal, said there was a focus on stopping stubble burning in rural areas.
The Supreme Court has summoned the Chief Secretaries of Haryana, Punjab, and I believe Uttar Pradesh, where all this stubble burning is taking place. And the Supreme Court has also come down very heavily and said that stubble burning needs to be stopped.
The BBC's Rajini Vaidyanathan is in Delhi and told us what it's like to live and breathe in Delhi at the moment.
As someone who's moved here, 8-9 months ago, this is my first pollution season, and just how it affects you, it's little things. I've been having non-stop headaches, feel thirsty a lot and nauseous most of the time, including right now, actually. But you just kind of manage it, and call me vain, but I also have a lot more spots on my skin because that's what the air pollution can do to you. I've also become obsessed with checking my air quality app. And I went down just before I talked to you, Jackie, to see what the latest reading was. And for the PM2.5, which is the level of small particulate matter, the small particles that go deep into your lungs, that was around 270. And just to give you some context, the World Health Organization says that a safe level of PM2.5 is 50. So we are still way, way above what is considered safe, although things are better today compared with what we were seeing at the weekend, AQI readings close to 1,000.
You are seeing some slight improvement then. How much do you think that's down to the authorities limiting car use in the city?
What some people are saying is the levels reduce because of changes in the weather patterns, which can often do that. So, you know, if there's more winds or rain or whatever, that can reduce the levels. I mean, they were staggering over the weekend, but they are still staggering now. So it's hard to know. Of course, this odd even scheme is one of the things that's being brought in to try and reduce emissions from vehicles, but they aren't the only thing that contributes to these extraordinarily high levels of pollution right now. Another factor being emissions from industrial pollution. So, you know, you've got factories that are polluting unchecked, that kind of thing. It's a whole toxic cocktail that really adds to this. And I was talking to a doctor earlier today who said that every breath that we take in Delhi amounts to inhaling poison. So, I mean, there you have it, really. We're all damaging our lungs just by existing here. And it doesn't really make a difference whether you're indoors or outdoors. Even with air pollution meters or purifiers in my house last week, I was getting readings of around 200.
It is obviously especially bad right now, but as you've indicated, smog is not that unusual in Delhi. Are the authorities looking at longer term changes which might actually tackle the problem in a long-term way?
Well, I mean, that's the debate that's going on at the moment. And the Supreme Court today, you know, accused the authorities of only being interested in gimmicks. Perhaps they were pointing the finger at that odd-even scheme that we were talking about. And also said that the authorities in some ways have been passing the buck in terms of who's responsible. Is it the Delhi state government that should be doing more? Is it the neighbouring states? What about the national government? What about Prime Minister Modi? Is he doing enough? You know, I don't know how many people know and are aware of how much the damage is. So how much pressure is being put on politicians, although that pressure is certainly amplifying as the days go by. But, you know, as I say, this happens every year. People have become accustomed to pollution season, as they call it.
That was Rajini Vaidyanathan in Delhi. Still to come.
Ladies and gentlemen, to whom it concerns, it's The Late Late Show. And here is your host, Gay Byrne.
We remember the veteran Irish broadcaster Gay Byrne, who has died at the age of 85. This week marks 30 years since the fall of the Berlin Wall. The man who precipitated a change in Europe that has had a profound impact is the last Soviet leader, Mikhail Gorbachev. He has told the BBC that the current standoff between Russia and the West is putting the world in colossal danger. The man who helped to end the Cold War described East-West relations today as chilly, but still a war. Remembering the fall of the wall, he says Moscow took a decision not to intervene. It was a matter for the Germans, he said, and bloodshed had to be avoided. Our Moscow correspondent Steve Rosenberg reports.
At the age of 88, Mikhail Gorbachev is in poor health, but his sense of humour is fighting fit. You were right to rush over for this interview, he tells me. At my age, I could go any moment. The former Soviet president gives few interviews these days, but he's agreed to talk to me about an event 30 years ago that changed the world. On November the 9th, 1989, the Berlin Wall fell, paving the way for German reunification. But how would Moscow react? At the time, there were hundreds of thousands of Soviet soldiers in East Germany.
We took the decision there mustn't be bloodshed over an issue of such magnitude. There were some people, like Margaret Thatcher, who didn't want a united Germany, but we declared we would not interfere. It was a matter for the Germans to decide.
Just 2 years later, the Soviet Union fell apart. Many Russians still blame President Gorbachev for the death of a superpower. But there were achievements, too.
The President of the United States and the General Secretary of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union.
Gorbachev performed a diplomatic double act with Ronald Reagan to reduce the nuclear arsenals of the USSR and America.
For the first time in history, the language of arms control was replaced by arms reduction.
But the disarmament treaty they signed has collapsed. Both Russia and America are testing new missiles and are being sucked into a new arms race.
How dangerous do you think the current confrontation is between Russia and the West?
As long as weapons of mass destruction exist, nuclear weapons, the danger is colossal. All nations should declare, all nations, nuclear weapons must be destroyed.
The words of Mikhail Gorbachev ending that report from Steve Rosenberg. British MPs have elected a new Speaker of the House of Commons to replace the high-profile former holder of the post, John Bercow. Sir Lindsay Hoyle will take on the role supervising MPs through the next stage of the Brexit process, among other things. After the vote, Sir Lindsay said he wanted to ensure Parliament's reputation for courtesy and tolerance.
I hope this House will be once a great respected House, not just in here, but across the world. But once again... It's the envy, and we've got to make sure that tarnish is polished away, that the respect and tolerance that we expect from everyone who works in here will be shown, and we'll keep that in order.
Our political correspondent Rob Watson has been following developments and told us more about what we could expect to hear from the new speaker.
Well, I guess the first thing to say is that he's going to be very different to the old speaker. I mean, they're such different characters. I mean, goodness, in every single way in terms of stature, in terms of where they're from. Sir Lindsay is from Lancashire in the north of England. He has this incredible kind of Lancastrian accent. But I guess the biggest difference will be in personality terms. So where Speaker Bercow was amazingly sort of flamboyant character with a very, very sharp tongue and a very sharp and abrasive manner sometimes, Sir Lindsay is the absolute opposite. So he's far more kind of low-key. He tends to deal with difficulties in the House of Commons chamber with wit rather than confrontation. So I think we're entering a very different age. But my absolute favourite detail about Sir Lindsay, which I think might tell you a lot, is that he's got a parrot called Boris, who he's taught how to say order, order. And he obviously loves animals. And anyone, if you look on social media, there's an astonishing photo of him surrounded by a couple of dogs, a cat, and Boris the parrot.
Now, listeners perhaps around the world will not be entirely surprised to discover that there is actually always something theatrical about the way a new speaker comes to the chair.
That is right. Look, we don't do anything in the UK without a little bit of theatricality and history, right? I mean, this is the mother of all parliaments. And don't forget, he is the 158th speaker. It goes back to the 14th century. It's not a recent job advert, this one. It's got a little bit of history to it. And yes, even at the end, there's a drama. So quietly, the speaker, of course, has been politely lobbying MPs, saying, please, please vote for me. But here's the great conclusion to this drama, is that he's actually physically dragged to the seat, to where the speaker sits, as if he'd been reluctant all along. And of course, I think that reflects in part the previous danger of that role, because of course, several speakers literally lost their heads in times past.
It's fine, we don't do that anymore. That was Rob Watson. Now, let's step back in time to the 20th of August, 1977.
4, 3, 2, 1. We have ignition and we have liftoff. We We have liftoff of the Titan Centaur carrying the first of two Voyager spacecraft to extend man's senses farther into the solar system than ever before.
It's 42 years since NASA launched its two Voyager spacecraft from Earth, and they're still going strong. They were the first two man-made objects to travel outside our solar system, one in 2012, the other a year ago. And the information they've been sending back to Earth since then has cast new light on the very nature of our sun and the planet. More from our science reporter, Paul Rincon.
In 1977, NASA launched two robotic space probes to explore the furthest reaches of our solar system. Carrying two gold discs with messages for any aliens they might meet, the two Voyager spacecraft have now travelled so far that it takes nearly a day for their signals to get back to Earth. By comparing data sent back by Voyager 1 with data from its identical companion, Voyager 2, scientists have been able to build a detailed picture of our cosmic neighbourhood. When Voyager 2 passed through the magnetic bubble surrounding the Sun and planets, it measured a change in the density of plasma, the charged particles and gas that permeate space. This is a clear sign that the probe was leaving the Sun's influence and crossing into a new region called interstellar space. Professor Don Gurnett from the University of Iowa explained what they found.
There is a very, very sharp boundary there. There was a time 50 years ago or so when people thought the solar wind would just get gradually whittled away or dissipated as it propagated to interstellar space. In fact, there's a very, very sharp boundary there, which we call the heliopause. And I'd just like to point out that that's a characteristic of fluids.
The spacecraft are now more than 10 billion miles away from Earth, much further than any human-built objects have travelled. Scientists hope there could be surprises in store as the probes venture even further into the unknown.
That was Paul Rincon. Now to an Irish broadcasting institution. Back in the 1960s, 70s and 80s, many households would huddle round their small TV screens and wait intently for this.
Gentlemen, to whom it concerns, it's The Late Late Show. And here is your host, Gay Byrne.
Now that host, the veteran Irish broadcaster Gay Byrne, has died at the age of 85. As one of the most recognisable faces of Irish broadcasting, he was best known as the host of The Late Late Show, which is the world's second longest-running chat show. The President of Ireland, Michael D. Higgins, said Gay Byrne challenged Irish society and shone a light not only on the bright, but also the dark sides of Irish life. Our arts correspondent Vincent Dowd told us about Gay Byrne and how he was regarded in Ireland.
Incredibly highly. Born Dublin in 1934, so he was in on the ground floor. This was his lucky break, really. In 1961, when Radio Telefish Éireann finally started a TV service, rather late, you might think. In 1962, The Late Late Show started as a weekly TV chat show. Byrne's charm was absolutely central to its success. He carried on until 1999. Gaybo, as he was often known, was like an extra brother or a son in the house. From the early 70s, he also did a daily discussion and phone-in show on RTE Radio, and that was Ireland's national notice board.
And tell us a little bit more about The Late Late Show and why it was so influential. It wasn't just cosy chat, was it? It was known for pushing boundaries.
No, it could be jolly, and then suddenly it would do something far more serious. For instance, back in the 60s and even 70s, it was seen as a scandal if an unmarried woman had a baby in Ireland. So The Late Late Show might simply interview an unmarried mother, and Gay would do so with sympathy and understanding. He was a good listener, which not everybody in broadcasting is. So there were other times when things happened which were slightly ridiculous sounding. The shocking Bishop and the Nighty affair of 1966. Gay Byrne asked a woman in his studio audience very lightheartedly what she'd worn on her wedding night. Mrs. Eileen Fox of Dublin said she'd worn nothing whatsoever. Among those outraged in the Catholic Church was the Bishop of Clonfert in County Galway. The heavens shook, but people survived. Gay Byrne even, and this would have been unthinkable a bit earlier in Irish broadcasting, quoted some instructions on using a condom.
If you'll pardon the expression, Roisin, would you roll it there, please? The condom is made of rubber, whether you knew it or not. There are two main types. On the left, a condom with a teat. On the right, plain without a teat.
I'm surprised and pretty shocked, to tell you.
You're surprised and pretty shocked. Yeah. Disappointed.
Gay Byrne there. So he was obviously this towering figure in Irish broadcasting.
Utterly, yes.
Give us an idea of what sort of reaction there has been to news of his death.
Well, we should say that it was well known that Gay Byrne was dying of cancer. So in one sense, it wasn't a shock. But people from the very top have been saying how much they are sad to see him go. I'll just quote Ireland's president, the head of state, Michael D. Higgins, who always has a good way with words. Gay Byrne challenged Irish society and he shone a light not only on the bright but also the dark sides of Irish life. He helped shape our conscience, our self-image and our idea of who we might be. And the broadcaster Graham Norton, an Irishman who's made a big career basically in the UK, said he showed us all how it should be done. Generous, funny, informed, but more than anything else, completely at ease on air.
Our arts correspondent Vincent Dowd on the Irish broadcaster Gay Byrne, who has died at the age of 85. And that's it from us for now. There will be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. But before I go, we are asking for your input again. It's November already, and that means it's time to think about our annual compilation of the happiest news stories of the year. The inspirational, uplifting, heartwarming, or hilarious. You know the sort of thing. Also, did anything wondrous happen to you this year? Record yourself telling us who and where you are and what happened, just a line, and then email it to us, and you might get on there as well. The usual email address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk, or if email is just too much of a struggle for you, tweet me using the hashtags globalnewspod or happynewspod. I'm Jackie Leonard, and until next time, goodbye.
Aerodynamics, camouflage, a sort of flexible skin, and new powerful glue, bug-resistant materials, scaling up the side of buildings like Spider-Man, saving thousands of lives.
This is 30 Animals That Made Us Smarter.
I'd like you to meet what I reckon are the toughest animals on Earth.
The podcast which investigates the amazing things that animals have taught us.
I was now completely out of my comfort zone.
30 Animals That Made Us Smarter.
But now for the light bulb moment.
From the BBC World Service.
They are the stuff of science fiction.
Catch up with the whole series now.
Stay away. I don't taste good and I'm venomous.
Just search for 30 Animals That Made Us Smarter wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by Capital One, where you can open a savings account in about 5 minutes and earn 5 times the national average. Just imagine 5 times more savings toward that overdue home addition. Maybe even an addition on that addition. This is banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One, N.A. member FDIC.